Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is Matt Spiegel, and we are off and running with Season 2 of the PBP, Voices of Baseball. The very best play-by-play voices in the game talk about their craft. Hear guests like Joe Davis explain the thought process during baseball's biggest games.
You got to widen the lens. What does this home run mean?
Harper, the swing of his life!
Incredible broadcasters sharing great stories from your favorite teams with new episodes weekly. Find us on the Odyssey app or wherever you find podcasts.
Live from the palatial yet not overly ostentatious Phoenix Convention Center, this is the Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on CBS Sports Radio across all the great local CBS Sports Radio affiliates, Sirius XM, Channel 158, the free Odyssey app, and of course streaming live on YouTube, youtube.com/CBS Sports Radio. Second day here from Phoenix, Arizona. We get closer and closer to the Final Four, which will commence on Saturday night. And obviously you do have Alabama with their quest to try to get to the national championship game going up against UConn. And then on the other side, the battle of the bigs between Zach Edey of Purdue and also DJ Burns of NC State with their magical run. So we're broadcasting you from the Phoenix Convention Center today. I got Samter here on site with me. And back in our New York City headquarters, we got Stuart Kovacs in addition to Manny Rodriguez and also our on-site engineer in Dan Silverman. A whole lot to do today. 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. You can always get at me on Instagram where I'm straight flexing or via the good old cesspool of Twitter at Zach Gelb. That's Z-A-C-H-G-E-L-B. We got a ton to get to today. Joining us live on the show will be Dan Munson. We will have Bryce Drew. We'll also see Fran McCaffrey stop by, Andy Enfield, the new head coach at SMU, and Mark Pope as well. And right as we got on the air, I did see from our pal John Rothstein of CBS Sports that there is a new hire, and the Must Bus is reportedly on the move from Arkansas, as Eric Musselman has reportedly landed the gig at USC. So we'll see what that means for the future of Bronny James as well. By the way, we are sponsored by Werner. Werner is the official ladder of the NCAA March Madness and the official ladder of construction professionals everywhere. Reach new heights with Werner, available nationally at the Home Depot. So I got to start the show off with this, and it's from Andrew Marchand, who is a media critic and a media insider and a media reporter. But it has to do with college football. And there's one thing in this story, and it's nothing with Andrew's reporting. Let me be abundantly clear about that, because the last thing I need is Andrew Marchand to start slamming Zach Gelb in The Athletic. But there's one thing in this reporting by Andrew Marchand that I absolutely despise and I absolutely hate, and it's future college football playoff expansion to 16 teams. Currently, we know that we're going to get ready to embark this year on a 12-team college football playoff. Inevitably, in the next 2 years, it's expected to go to 14. And then shortly after that, not only could we see it go to 16, but we could see a larger, drastic change to college football as we once did know it. So this is the bombshell, let's just say, headline and article from Andrew Marchand. College presidents and top executives have devised a super league to transform college football as they believe the current system is doomed and headed for bankruptcy. That's what insiders do tell The Athletic. So, you know, when I was in college, I was not great at reading long papers and books and things like that. And there was this website called SparkNotes, and you would go to SparkNotes and it would basically trim everything down for you. It would condense everything. So lazy people that wanted to get into the radio business like yours truly, that were not interested in reading all these ridiculous books that they would make you read that had nothing to do with help you with your profession, but you had to pass the class and you had to go by my philosophy of C's do get degrees, that you can kind of condense the reading and the actual hard work and get a good enough gist and a good enough understanding of what was going on so you could write your paper, write what you needed to do, present what you needed to present, and have enough information without really doing the work. So I'm basically the SparkNotes version here. I'll tell you what you need to know so you could pass the test from this Andrew Marchand article. Basically, it is talking about the 130 FBS teams that are currently actively participating in college football, and it would be a new system and a new structure where everyone would break away. All 130 of those teams would break away, and they would form this Super League for just college football, and it would only be college football. So the way that this would work is there would be, for the easier side of understanding this, Division I and Division II out of the 130 teams, and there would be seven divisions of 10 teams, and that would consist 70 teams total. I know I'm not great with math, but at least I could do that. And the 70 teams that would be in those, spread out through those first seven divisions, 10 each, those would be all your traditional, normal, as you know it, Power 5 teams. And they would never be in danger of getting relegated, and I'll explain the further part of this in just a bit. And then there would be an eighth division, and that eighth division would basically be the 10 remaining group of five schools that are the best. And then from that, you would have Division One, where it would be the 70 Power 5 schools through seven divisions, and then that extra eighth division where you could have teams move down and move up through time year by year. Now, everyone else that is not out of those 80 teams in the 130 would practically be in Division Two, and Division Two would be the rest, the have-nots, for just the easier way of saying it. It would be the rest of everybody else that was participating in Division One football as we know it, FBS football as we currently know it, and that's the way that the system will work. And through time, those schools can move up into that eighth division in Division One. So I know that's a lot. I know it's tough to understand a little bit, but that's where it's nothing that's sealed, signed, and delivered. It's nothing that's set in stone, but that's something that is being pushed right now. I'm okay with that idea. Like, I'm not a big soccer guy. I'm not Samter and Stu that will just slobber all over soccer, but I understand the soccer model for this. I'm just surprised that this is already being talked about right now, because usually, and I know it'd be breaking away from the NCAA, but just understanding college sports, they move very slowly. They move like molasses. They move like me in my 40-yard dash time. And I didn't expect the thought of this change to be out there this quickly. And we've talked about this before with RIP practically to the Pac-12 and there only being four power divisions anymore. It already had a sense in just those four conferences. When you look at the ACC, when you look at the Big 12, the SEC, and the Big 10, when it comes to football only, remember this is a football only conversation, it already felt as if it was the haves and the have-nots. And for the most part, it was the Big 10 and the SEC as the haves, and then everyone else is the have-nots. Ultimately, I did think that this would truncate into college football really being a three-conference sport where it's the Big 10, it is the SEC, and then it's everybody else. But this idea, through the reporting of Andrew Marchand, would be that all the 130 would be included. They would be their own entity, and that's how it would operate moving forward. And it would be broken off basically into two divisions where, let me just make this clear, the 70 teams that were a part of the Power Five, they're never in danger of falling below to the have-not category. So they would be grandfathered in. And I have one little gripe with that. If you're one of the 70 schools and through time you show you don't belong and there's group of five schools that have been better and maybe they should move up, well, I have no problem if they end up usurping you. Like, I don't think this should be a half-assed thing. If you're going to go to this format where you could get relegated, I think that this should be all in, not just protecting the Power Five schools, but it probably comes back to the brands and the money and all that. But my biggest takeaway from this, and maybe it's just me because I feel like at this point I am standing like on a mountain and I'm waving a flag pretty much all by myself. I was irate when this article came out yesterday, not because of the system, because like I said, I thought we were going to get truncated potentially into three conferences. Maybe at one time it just be all under one umbrella, and this would be the drastic shift to this. But they're ruining college football. That's what they're doing right now, because everyone's panicking with the transfer portal. Everyone's panicking with lawsuits. Everyone's panicking with name, image, and likeness. And there's all this panicking going on from people that have been with the sport for so long, and they're refusing to change. They're refusing to adjust. They're refusing to adapt, because this all goes back to the root of the issue that for so many years, everyone legally got a piece of the pie in college football, but the players that were actually participating. And the system, you know, from what I was reading, it would provide a little bit more clarity in name, image, and likeness. Players would get paid and all that. And I'm all fine for that stuff. But college football is still a beautiful thing. And you could mess with a lot of things in life and a lot of things in sports. In this world, you know, when we live in America, there's something that we could all agree on, and it's the beauty of football. And it's the love and really the religious-type atmosphere that football does have in our country. And I hate when we make changes that don't make sense to college football. And that's my problem, because with this, I don't think college football is broken right now. People say college football is broken, college sports are broken. No, you just need to kind of open your eyes. You need to find a way to meet people in the middle and understand that it's a different format. And we now are living in an era of player empowerment. And I get it, right? The NCAA, college football playoff, everyone is chasing a bag. Everyone is being greedy. And in any sport, if you give people more of a chance to make more money, they're going to do that. But I've sat here before, on this show before, I've sat here on CBS Sports Radio for years, and I've said, do not expand the college football playoff. I've already lost that argument. I'll tell you when I lose an argument. I still think I'm right. I don't think that we should be going to 12 teams. I don't think we should eventually be going to 14 teams. And in this new system, if it does happen, and it's a long ways away from happening, it's just floated out there what other people are talking about. So there has to be some juice. There has to be some energy behind this. But we're talking about potentially going to 16 teams. If that's the case, I don't want to see a cupcake on any of these college football team schedule. I don't. Because there's never been a year outside of this past year where anyone has ever seen the need to go to more than four teams in the college football playoff. There's never been a year outside of this year. You know, you want to tell me go to six, you want to tell me go to eight, that's fine. Going to 12, which is going to come your way starting this year, is a joke. So now we got to reward schools like Penn State that don't beat the big boys like Michigan and Ohio State, and they get backed in just because of the brand of Penn State. And there's another examples. I get it. Penn State sometimes a pinata on this show. I'm fully cognizant of that. But that's just one of the schools that we didn't need to see more of. And that's what's going to happen in a 12-team format. And I said this when it was sealed, signed, and delivered that we were going to 12, that this is just the beginning. And that's why if they were going to move the college football playoff, make it an incremental move. Go from 4 to 6. Go from 4 to 8. But don't be a jackass and don't be a greedy pig and go from 4 to 12. And then right away, boom, it's already going to 14. And in this new format, it's going to 16. It just doesn't make sense. It's just – it's what happens in the society now where we're no longer looking for the elite. We're no longer looking for greatness. It's okay, you show up, you know, you're okay, you're average, and we're going to give you more of an opportunity to try to succeed in the college football playoff. I love the college football regular season because every game matters. And when you start to go to 12, when you start to go to 14, when you eventually start to go to 16, and it's only going up from there, you're going to devalue the regular season. And it's a flat-out joke. It is a flat-out joke. And you take away from these important rivalries that have made college football, that creates the passion within a fan base. So through all this deep dive that Andrew Marchand did release yesterday, and I have no problem with the idea of college football breaking away and forming a super league, but my biggest problem is right away buried in that article is that, hey, it will be 16 teams in the playoff, the eight division winners and the eight wild card teams, and that's just way too many. We do not need eventually 16. We don't need 14. We don't need 12. Six or eight as most. And I'll sit here and I will bitch and complain about this for years and years and years and more on, because it is going to really ruin what we know college football as it is. And that's a shame. It really is a shame, because the regular season games aren't going to matter as much as they once did. And look how many times we sit here in sports and we complain about bad products in the regular season. And my biggest fear, and I know it's football, I know there's always going to be passion, we're going to love it, is that college football is eventually going to turn into the NBA, where it's like, all right, the regular season, who cares? Nothing really to see here, rather pedestrian, and just wake me up when the postseason starts. And that would be a travesty, an absolute travesty if it happens. But this is what transpires when we all know sports, which they make a ton of money, especially football, and they keep on looking for more and more money. We continue to provide more and more opportunity and more chances for teams to get into the playoff. But to drastically change the structure as we've seen in recent years, it's just way too far. It's just way too many teams. And I don't think going to 12, 14, 16, whatever it's eventually going to be. What is it? When they're going to be 24? It's just way too many. And I said the same thing for March Madness. You know, I'm okay with the way that March, like, this may not be popular because I'm sitting in a room right now where there's a bunch of stations that are coming here to cover the Final Four. But I'm fine being the minority on this one. 68 teams is enough. A bunch of us just parachute in to the college basketball, you know, postseason tournament into March Madness. And this is everything that I would not want to have happen into football. And after 3 weeks, it's been enough of the tournament. When you start adding more than 68 teams to the tournament, you once again make the regular season irrelevant. And the regular season's already irrelevant right now in college basketball. But that's what happens in sports because of money, because of the dollars. We just keep on adding in more and more to the postseason. And I really think it takes away from the sport, even though the money keeps on going up and up and up. All righty, this is Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. We're broadcasting to you live today from the Phoenix Convention Center. We'll be here today and tomorrow from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern across all of our great local CBS Sports Radio affiliates, Sirius XM, Channel 158, the free Odyssey app. You could always watch us on YouTube, youtube.com/CBS Sports Radio. We do have a loaded guest list today. Bryce Drew is going to be stopping by, Dan Munson, Fran McCaffrey, Andy Enfield, Mark Pope as well. So a lot cooking here from the site of the Final Four. We will take a break, and when we come on back, why Stephon Diggs is the right move for the Houston Texans, but it could also one day turn into the wrong move. I'll tell you why when we come on back in 5 minutes.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Using your phone while you're driving could kill someone. Put the phone away or pay. Paid for by NHTSA. It is the Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on CBS Sports Radio. We know yesterday the big trade did go down between the Houston Texans and the Buffalo Bills. That did see the Stephon Diggs era come to a close in Buffalo. And now we'll see his third team be the Houston Texans. And I saw something coming back from break where I don't know if it's true or not in terms of the information that is being given out, but if it is true, this is something that, as Emmett Smith would say, it just makes me hot. It really makes me annoyed. So DeSean Jackson, the former NFL wide receiver, was on Up and Adams today with Kay Adams, and DeSean Jackson said that Stephon Diggs didn't think the Bills could beat the Chiefs, and that's why he wanted out of Buffalo. So, in one breath, you're like, okay, you admire someone for wanting to be part of the reason why you win a championship and you want to go to a spot where you think you can win a championship. But the reason why I kind of roll my eyes at this, and this story does annoy me, is that if Stephon Diggs just would have caught that 70, 75-yard bomb that did occur up against the Kansas City Chiefs, there's a good chance that the Buffalo Bills would have defeated the Kansas City Chiefs this past year. And they would have won that divisional round game. And then they're in the conference title game. And if Buffalo's in the conference title game going into Baltimore, I'm picking Buffalo 9 times out of 10 to go take down the Baltimore Ravens. So if that's true, I just think it's incredibly dumb. And it's a poor line of thinking with Stephon Diggs because it takes away any accountability. And it makes him say and makes him basically be portrayed as, oh, well, we didn't beat the Kansas City Chiefs when it mattered, so it was never going to happen, and now I need to leave. Where you were in a good situation. Like, the Bills have been right there. They have to make changes, and now they're going to retool, and now they're going to revamp their wide receiving core. But Dalton Kincaid had a good season for them. And James Cook made a big improvement from year one to year two. A lot of people, they're going to rain, and they're going to dance. A lot of people are going to dance in the grave on the Buffalo Bills in the last 24, 48 hours, and they're going to say that this parade and this, you know, good last few years is over with. I fully disagree with that. And the reason why I disagree with that is you have a quarterback next month. He turns 28 years old. Like, Josh Allen's still in the prime of his career. Josh Allen still enters next year as a top three quarterback in the NFL. The only two quarterbacks that are better than him are Patrick Mahomes and Joe Burrow. And yes, when it matters, you may not beat the Kansas City Chiefs, but the Bills have defeated the Kansas City Chiefs recently twice in the regular season. So if that's true, that what DeSean Jackson is saying, that Stephon Diggs didn't think they couldn't beat the Chiefs, well, Stephon, how about you look yourself in the mirror? How about you take some accountability because you were a big reason why the team didn't get the job done? And your numbers and your second half production, they were atrocious last year. Well, we're talking about Thanksgiving was the last time this guy had a touchdown. But this is the Stephon Diggs playbook. The juice is usually worth the squeeze with Stephon Diggs. In Minnesota, it was worth the squeeze, but then he didn't want to be there anymore. So then you make the trade, and Minnesota benefited from it because they ultimately got Justin Jefferson out of it. The Buffalo Bills, the first few years, it was obviously worth it with Stephon Diggs. But that relationship basically ended 2 years ago when they lost in the divisional round to the Cincinnati Bengals, and he blew off the media. He was pouting. He was walking away. And then there was some issue that we still don't know the truth, so maybe Stephon was in the right, but there was some issue between Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs. And the Buffalo Bills, and I have friends that are on the Buffalo Bills, like close friends, everyone in Buffalo looked at us, whether it was me, whether it was you, whether it was anybody listening, and they looked at everyone that said there's a problem in Buffalo, and they said there's no problem in Buffalo. Like, who are we kidding? Seriously. Everyone could tell you that there was a problem between Stephon Diggs, Sean McDermott, Josh Allen, and Brandon Bean. And the way that you knew that there was a problem was because most coaches, they try to put out the fire. And Sean McDermott, if you go back to right when Stephon Diggs left the team, when they were initially reporting, he threw gasoline on that fire because he pretended like he didn't know what was going on. And then once the toothpaste was out of the tube, they tried to put it all back into the tube and do crisis management. So this divorce was inevitable. I do not fault the Buffalo Bills for moving on from Stephon Diggs, and you can't fault them for acquiring Stephon Diggs when they did, because it was positive. But going to Houston now for Stephon Diggs, you got to ask yourself this question. Is it worth it? Is this a move, even with all the problems that you know eventually do arrive with Stephon Diggs, is the move worth it? And even though I've been very critical in the last 5 minutes of Stephon Diggs, this move is absolutely worth it for the Houston Texans. Because this is a team that they overachieved. I would say that the Texans exceeded expectations last year. That would actually make me think that there were expectations for the Texans last year. There were no expectations for the Texans last year. And the Houston Texans not only won a division, they were in the playoffs and they won a playoff game. And now we look at the Texans, where you have two bookends to lead your franchise into the future with C.J. Stroud and Will Anderson Jr. And now you've added pieces this offseason that do enhance your team. From Danielle Hunter on the defensive side of the ball, which is going to make it a lethal 1-2 punch kind of situation with Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson. And then on the offensive side of the ball, you get Stephon Diggs to complement him into a receiving core that already had Nico Collins and Tank Dell coming off the injury. I know Joe Mixon may not have a lot of gas left in the tank, but he is fine for another year or two if you need some production out of the running back situation. And I don't even think the Cincinnati Bengals wanted to keep Joe Mixon as long as they did, but he's been productive. He's been solid. But clearly the Bengals started to sour on Mixon 3 years ago when they had Samaje Perine on the field in a crucial moment and a pivotal moment in the Super Bowl. So this Texans team now, they're being aggressive, and I respect them being aggressive, and they're taking risks. And yes, even though Stephon Diggs, at the end of his time in Minnesota and at the end of his time in Buffalo, could be a royal pain in the ass, it's still worth it. It is still a risk worth taking. Because here's what's getting lost in the conversation. Stephon Diggs, even though down the stretch towards the end in Buffalo he was no good, he gave you 3 solid years before that. And in Minnesota, even though we didn't look at him as a great wide receiver in Minnesota, he was extremely productive with the Vikings. So the Stephon Diggs playbook is this. It's a strong start. And he'll give you 2 or 3 really good years. And now that's going to be tested because he's getting up there in age. He turns 31 this upcoming winter. And you started to see him decline a little bit last year. But he was still 1,100-yard receiver last season. Now, the stats weren't as great as the way that they appear and the way that they look at. But for a team like the Texans, you only need Stephon Diggs to be good for a year or two because you have a window here where this is an added luxury. This is not a move that you needed to make. This is an added luxury for a team that was already a double-digit win team a year ago and a squad that already made the playoffs and won a playoff game. You have the stud quarterback for the foreseeable future on a rookie deal. You have the stud pass rusher for the foreseeable future in the rookie deal. And it's about taking chances. And for Nick Caserio, there was a while where it was patience, 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 patience with the Texans, right? Where they would bring in coaches where you knew they were not going to be there when the Texans were succeeding. Lovie Smith, David Culley. The Texans were in punt, 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 punt mode for a while. And then at last year's NFL draft, the Texans said, we're not messing around anymore. With the second overall pick, they took C.J. Stroud, and they aggressively traded up back to 3 to go get Will Anderson. And that started moving the ball forward with this organization. So I like what the Texans have done this offseason. I think the Texans, who could have been passive, they could have just sat on their hands and done nothing. The Texans said, let's build off what we did. And even though you're bringing in a player that will eventually be disgruntled and will eventually start disliking people in the organization and being a problem, I'm fine taking this risk and eventually seeing it end poorly as long as Stephon Diggs has done what he's always done his entire career, and that's at least given you a few good years and at least given you 2 years where you have a number one wide receiver. And that's why for this move, it is a win-win, because the Bills knew if they waited a year from now, it was only going to get uglier and you wouldn't get much back for him. And I get it. It's not a rich return. You're getting a 2025 second round pick, but it shows you behind the scenes how ugly this thing was getting and how little they probably did portray publicly with some of the things that we already knew that was going on. Like some of those things we knew were bad. We knew that it was ugly. We knew that they were messy, but we weren't getting told the entire story. But this trade just reconfirms and reaffirms to us that it was worse than what we actually thought. And the Texans benefit from it. So the Texans swoop in. You get a good wide receiver to pair to Nico Collins. And even if in 3 years from now we're talking about how this is ugly, we're talking about how Stephon Diggs is a malcontent and how this is a messy situation, as long as he puts up the first 2 years and he balls out, it's a move that you knew what you were getting into, and it is worth it for the Houston Texans. It is the Zach Yelp Show, coast to coast on CBS Sports Radio. We're broadcasting to you live today from the Phoenix Convention Center, getting you geared up for the Final Four that will come your way on Saturday evening. We have Alabama and UConn. We have Purdue and NC State. We're going to take a break here, and when we come on back, Dan Munson's going to join us live on set, the former coach of Long Beach State. Remember, he was told he wasn't being brought back in March. And then his team found a way to get into the NCAA tournament. So he'll join us on the other side. This portion of the show is sponsored by the new Hyundai Tucson, available with complimentary class-leading BlueLink Plus. Now it's easy to use your phone to control your Tucson. It is the Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on CBS Sports Radio, broadcasting live from the Phoenix Convention Center as we're getting set for the Final Four coming your way Saturday evening. My next guest, his team did make the NCAA tournament this past year. He's now the former Long Beach State head coach and also was at Minnesota. You remember his great run back in 1999 at Gonzaga, and that's Coach Dan Munson. Coach, always appreciate the time. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, that's a lot of former, though. You know, former Gonzaga, former Minnesota, former Long Beach. So, but I'm here. It's still upright and going at it. So
this one was the most bizarre. And it's like the awkward conversation. I'm sure 9,000 people have asked you about it. But you basically get relieved of your duties, I guess, is the proper way of saying it. But you're still coaching the team, and your team goes on a run to the NCAA tournament. You've been around a lot in this sport. I've never seen anything like that.
Yeah, it was odd. You know, it wasn't. We kind of limped in at the end of the year. We'd had a good year. I mean, we beat Michigan on the road. We beat USC on the road. We beat DePaul on the road. You know, nobody other team in the country had a Pac-12 road win, a Big Ten, and a Big East win. And then, you know, we were second in the league, got some injuries, and kind of limped in at the end. So I actually went called the AD and asked about, you know, my contract was up, and after the tournament, you know, if we didn't win the tournament, maybe resigning and getting a new voice. So it wasn't just out of the blue, but it was out of the blue that it happened that day, you know, because there's no way I was going to resign that day with a week left in the season, because, you know, at a mid-major, that week means everything. And that's what you instill in your team, that we're going to fight till the end, and we win this tournament, and it changes your whole season. And so it went from one of the worst days professionally that I've had in my career, but one of the best days personally, because to go into that locker room and see my team, you know, it's like a parent. You know, you're always pushing them, you're always disciplining them, you're always holding them accountable. You don't really know if they love you until they can show you. And once in a while, the kids will show you, and you're like, okay, this is really cool. This is why I'm a parent. The same with a coach, you know, to see the love in that room for guys that to actually tell you that, you know, 100 times that week when we got together. It was a special week that I wouldn't have traded for any job. And actually, I guess I did that.
We know your locker room, like you said, is the most important part.
Yeah.
But then you guys get to the tournament, and so many coaches speak out about what happened. I know you don't want to be like the coach that gets all the sympathy. So was that some of that praise from the other coaches, even though it was nice, was a little bit awkward?
A little bit, you know. I mean, but most of that was Mark Few and Tommy Lloyd, and that's family. I mean,
yeah.
We started at Gonzaga together. You know, we're in the business because of each other. You know, and family's supposed to be upset. You know, they're supposed to talk irrational when one of their loved ones is having adversity. And I mean, my wife is you know, the mama bear of them all. I mean, she's ready to, you know, put her hands on anybody right now. So you know, but that's how people protect each other. And this is a very tough business. It's a great business, and we're all really privileged to be in it. But I think it's, you know, we all know how difficult of jobs they are, and so you know, it's a lot of compassion within the industry.
Like you were saying, there were questions about your future before the news did come on down. But when you're getting ready for the NCAA tournament, and your AD comes out and basically says, "Oh yeah, we did this in mind to really get this run and elicit this run and inspire this team." How'd you kind of react to that? Because it's almost like saying, oh, I knew this was going to happen, and I just didn't really buy it when I heard those comments.
Well, I think we all, you know, have an opinion. You know, we all, you know, the kids made it happen. There wasn't an AD. It wasn't me. The kids made that run happen. I just was concerned about them because at the NCAA tournament, they're very strict on your timelines, and you can't get on the court until there's exactly 1 hour before the game. So you get there early to make sure that you get your whole hour. So we got there about an hour and a half before the game. And so the kids had about 30 minutes to just sit in the locker room. So as kids will do, they're on their phones. And that story broke, and it was just unfortunate. So, you know, if it inspired them the week before, that's awesome. But it surely distracted them, you know, because I didn't know what was going on because I'm not on my phone. And they get emotional and upset. And I'm like, what's going on? They tell me. I'm like, We're going to enjoy the most important game of our life right now. We're not going to get worried about who gets credit for it or what we're doing, and so we just tried to move past it. But the biggest thing was unfortunate the timing of it for our players to get it right before the game.
Coach Dan Munson here with us. Back in 1999, because you see NC State, they're here as an 11 seed. You guys got to the Elite Eight as a 10 seed. Now, you guys had a much better regular season record in 99 than what NC State did have. You always have confidence in your team, but some years you know maybe your team's not capable of going to a level that they end up doing. When in 99, when you're going through that run, did you kind of realize, okay, this is something really special that's humming at Gonzaga?
Well, I always say that one of my biggest regrets of my career is the run in 99, and people are like, what? And I said, not that it, I mean, any. Obviously, it was probably the pinnacle of my career, and it happened too early that I didn't appreciate it. Like that's what this last 2 weeks. It's so hard to get here that I was not going to, you know, worry about my job. I was going to enjoy the run with these players and appreciate the journey and the blood and sweat and tears that it takes to get to here. Because, you know, in 99, I didn't really realize that. That's like you're saying today about everybody and the story of Dan Munson and the dismissal and the run and everything. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't realize that it's national until you get to something like this today. And you're going around to every newscast in the country. And it just then, I didn't really realize it. The thing I remember about 1999 is, you know, there wasn't the internet or the cell phones or the national. And so you didn't realize you're in your own bubble as a team. And or those kids were, just like this year, we're just enjoying our time together. And we get more free meals and more, you know, free hotel rooms. And we're just thinking it's great. And then when we finally lost to UConn in the Elite Eight game and we get land back in Spokane, it was an unseasonably like 80 degree day, and I'll just never forget hitting campus and people were in the trees and people were lined the streets, and the bus couldn't even get to the back to the Martin Center because there were so many people. And I'm like, all these people actually watched us, you know. I guess you don't realize what the power of, you know, national TV does to a run like that. But we didn't realize, we just were out there playing together, and that's kind of how the last couple weeks have been with me and my team.
Do you feel like you've coached your last game?
I'm not sure. I'm trying to just stay married right now, because being at home right now is not, you know, she's not that fired up about seeing me, you know.
You don't want your wife to enter the transfer portal, right?
Yeah, so you know, I think I got to do something. You know, I don't think I'm ready to just hang on the couch right now, but it's to say I'm going to coach my last game. I don't control all that, you know. I mean, it's not like these jobs are just, they're knocking at the door of a guy that, you know, they love coaches that went to the tournament, but they don't really like guys that got fired. So what my value is, I don't think anybody really knows right now.
Well, Coach, thanks so much for stopping by. We appreciate it. Continued success.
Great. Thanks for having me.
There he is, Dan Munson, joining us on the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. Once again, just a bizarre story where you get let go and you still have to coach the team. Your team goes on a run. Then the AD starts to take all these ridiculous bows for inspiring the team, and it serves as a distraction before the first round of the NCAA tournament, like he kind of laid out going up against Arizona. Not that they would have won the game even if the story didn't come out about what the AD said, but it's kind of disheartening when you read things like that. But do appreciate Coach stopping on by. And the reason why I brought up his Gonzaga team back in 1999 was, now we look at the Gonzaga program as a force and as a power, and I know they haven't won a national championship, but Mark Few, who was on his staff, has done just a remarkable job at that university, and they exceeded kind of expectations a bit from where they were going into the tournament. A lot of people thought they were going to get picked off in the first round, but you go back to that run in 1999 where they got all the way up to the Elite Eight. I think they lost like 68-62. To UConn, and it was a close game, came right down to the wire. You start to wonder when teams believe that they could go on a run like that, because you talk to any coach, he'll say he believes in his players. You talk to any of the players, they say, oh, we could always believe that we could do something like this. But there's a difference in saying it and then actually believing it, and you equate it and correlate it to this year in the NCAA tournament. Not that in 1999 Gonzaga was as putrid as NC State was in the regular season. They only had like 7 or 8 losses in the regular season back in 1999. But for NC State, man, like, this was a team that was 17-14, and Kevin Keats was on the verge of getting fired. Like, he was right on the hot seat, and he was on the verge of being let go by the university, and you win 5 games in 5 days. And I remember we had him on after their victory up against Texas Tech, and it was right before the game up against Oakland that they ended up winning in overtime. And I said to him, you know, is your team about to lose their legs? Because you go on one of those runs, 5 games, 5 days, you win all 5, you get the euphoria of taking down Texas Tech, and you start to say, okay, maybe the squad's going to exhale, and maybe that squad is going to just say, okay, we got as far as we got, and now it's all going to just fall down, and you were not going to have the energy and the durability to be able to go through more. But you look at what they've been able to do. Hey, it didn't hurt that you get Oakland and you don't get another like 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 seed in that range. Like, you're not getting a higher seed. So you get Oakland and you survive that game. And then after that, you know, they took it to Marquette in that first half. And in up against Duke, they were the better team. And you've seen the sensation of DJ Burns just kind of form right in front of her eyes. And I get it. DJ Burns was highly recruited at one point. But when he transferred from Tennessee, like, no one was talking about DJ Burns when he was at Winthrop. And quite frankly, no one was talking about DJ Burns until 2 weeks ago. Like, we weren't. And now everyone tries to be an expert on DJ Burns, but that's the beauty of this March Madness and of this NCAA tournament. Well, now you'll always remember the name DJ Burns. Even if they don't find a way to win on Saturday night, you'll always remember that name because of the big personality, the big smile, and just seeing the way that he plays in the court and this remarkable run that has led Kevin Keats, you know, just when it started in the ACC tournament, where you win the ACC tournament and you get a 2-year contract extension, but for it to form into this, where they beat Texas Tech, they beat Oakland, they beat Marquette, led, coached by Shaka Smart, you beat Duke, where Duke was looking like they were getting ready to plant the flag in the stand for John Shire, right in the grounds, and say, okay, this is our time, this new era in 2 years, it's working under John Shire. And I get it, Duke is bringing in big recruit after big recruit next year, so Duke basketball is going to be in a big spot, but this has a Cinderella feel to it. And I know people are going to tell me, they're in the ACC, Zach, so you can't call them a Cinderella. Why not? You tell me an 11 seed is in the Final Four? Yeah, that's a Cinderella. Now, I know people don't look at Cinderellas as schools that participate in the ACC. You know, last 20, 25 years, you think it's more so Loyola Chicago. You think it's more George Mason and Florida Gulf Coast from years ago. And you could go through those teams, et cetera, et cetera. But this team, it absolutely has the feel. And it absolutely has the makings. And absolutely has the look of a Cinderella team. So it's a bizarre story. It's a fun story. It's a great story. And it's pretty damn cool to see how this is unfolded. And now when you get to these 4 final teams, you know, Alabama was doubted to get into the tourney. NC State, it was a great run. No one thought they were going to get here to the Final Four. And then you have the two, obviously, big schools and the two big-time players in Donovan Clingan with UConn, and we know they've been the team to beat ever since they won the championship. And then on the other side, it's Purdue with Zach Edey and Matt Painter overcoming what happened a year ago where they lost to a 16 seed. And we saw when Virginia lost to a 16 seed, they were able to not only get to the Final Four, but then win the 2 next games and won a championship. We'll see if Purdue can do that. All righty, this is Zach Yelp Show, Coast to Coast on CBS Sports Radio, broadcasting to you live from the Phoenix Convention Center. I think we know who the Commanders are taking at 2. We'll tell you next.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.